to the NXT Podcast, your home for weekly NXT reviews and insight.
The beautiful part of NXT is that when one dream ends, another dream begins.
Find all of your NXT news, recaps, and analysis right here. So with that being said, we only have one question for you.
Are you ready?
We thought so. Let's get the show started right now.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the NXT Podcast. As always, my name is Zachary Smith, once again, to host your show for NXT this week, coming off of a very exciting TakeOver 31 last Sunday. We had a great, and I mean great, TakeOver show. We have a very good episode of NXT to talk about here today. As always, you can follow me on Twitter. I am at ZachNXT. That's at ZachNXT. We're always talking about wrestling and other fun stuff over there. You can join in there. Now, as I said, we had TakeOver this Sunday and didn't get a chance to talk about TakeOver itself. So rather than the news and notes that we usually go over with the company, we're going to go ahead and talk about that just a little bit. Because since the pandemic started and WWE as a whole hasn't been able to have crowds, a lot of people have felt the loss of crowds, including myself. And I think more than any other brand, NXT has felt that. And I think it's because NXT, a lot of what makes it so special is that Full Sail crowd, or that crowd for a TakeOver. A TakeOver crowd is like few other things in wrestling and in live entertainment. It always feels like every fan is 100% dialed in and dang near rabid for the action going on in the ring. Sometimes there's chants, sometimes there's songs. The crowd is always very, very loud, and the performers really feed off of that crowd, and it really helps make for the best possible show. Now, in NXT, we have had the Performance Center athletes acting as our crowd. Now we have a mix of Performance Center athletes mixed with virtual fans in the arena, and we now have the Capitol Wrestling Center, which is kind of a new arena for NXT to perform in, which helps the aesthetic a lot. And I think that this has probably been my favorite wrestling show since the pandemic started. This is the least that I have felt the loss of a crowd. I don't know if it was because of the action in the ring, every match felt like a TakeOver match, or if it was the Performance Center athletes really bringing their all to that TakeOver, or the mix of virtual fans. I'm not sure exactly what it was, but at no point during that TakeOver did I say, oh man, I really wish there were a crowd here. Obviously, I do, but this was one of the best TakeOvers that they've done. And that's something that NXT is known for. Every TakeOver seems to be the new bar in how good a TakeOver can be. And you keep thinking that they're not going to top themselves, but they do. And I think when we look back on this TakeOver, it's going to be remembered very, very fondly, and it's going to be one of the first wrestling shows that the first thing you're going to say is not going to be, yeah, but if there were only a crowd there. So, TakeOver 31 from Sunday. We had Damian Priest beating Johnny Gargano. Damian Priest retained the NXT North American Championship. They opened the show. That's always a good spot to be in. I always say that you either want to be the main event or you want to be the first match out when the crowd is at their freshest and the show is new. This was a very, very good match. Johnny, I believe, has made something like 20 straight takeovers, which is an incredible streak. And it seems like he always brings something above an A game. I don't know what would be above an A, but an A plus game, I suppose. He always has classic matches on TakeOver, and this is something I think Damian Priest really needed. I think that Damian Priest's character leaves something to be desired, but Damian Priest himself in the ring is very, very good. And having a dance partner like Johnny Gargano in a match is only going to make you look better. They put on an excellent match, and Damian Priest won. Damian Priest gets a successful title defense under his belt. It was interesting that Johnny and Candace both did that thing where the bad guys lay out the good guys the week or the last show before a pay-per-view and are holding the championships, because that generally means that the person holding the title is not going to win, because they're made to look good right before the show. They usually don't end up winning at the show. So at no point, because of that and just because of the stories and the people involved, I didn't think Johnny or Candace were walking away with titles. I thought that it would be much too soon to obviously beat Damian Priest for the North American title. He just won it. And I still think it's too soon to take it off of Io Shirai, the women's title. I think that Io has been our best champion in NXT, if not in the whole of the company in some ways. But I just never got the feeling that either of them were going to lose their titles. That being said, they both had great matches, and this is a great way to start off a pay-per-view. NXT is very good at this, starting off a pay-per-view strong with a really great match, and Johnny keeps the streak alive. I sincerely do not remember the last bad match that he had. At worst, he makes matches very, very good, and that's rare to have in a performer, and I think Johnny sometimes goes under the radar because you know what to expect from him, but then you see matches like this and you remember just how great he really is. We had Kushida and the Velveteen Dream in a match, but really this was Kushida beating the hell out of the Velveteen Dream. He makes Velveteen Dream tap out to the armbar, and then after the match puts the armbar back on, really attacking Dream and beating him down. I thought that it was getting the Velveteen Dream off of TV. It was that kind of beatdown where the person is usually gone for a little bit. That doesn't end up being what happens. We'll talk about that later. But it was an excellent match. Kushida is a different character than he was when he debuted, and he's only gotten better. And this was an important step in that. And so I thought that this was a very good match as well. It's important to have matches like this when you have a character like Kushida who's going through a character change, because you need to establish that he has this new attitude, and you need to establish that he is effective in the ring. You also need to establish that he has this mean streak now, and this is something that he's going to have to be reckoned with. He's not the same happy-go-lucky guy that he was when he was doing a Back to the Future entrance and having really good matches. Now he's pissed off, and he's showing it. Santos Escobar beat Isaiah Swerve Scott, so Santos Escobar is still your cruiserweight champion. This was an excellent match. This is King Cuerno versus Killshot from Lucha Underground, and they had something like a Lucha Underground match. This is the most foot on the gas pedal match thus far, and it's the most that I've seen from these two guys since coming to NXT and being cruiserweight champion and feuding over this title. I feel like we can be done with this feud now. I feel like there's been enough matches, and Santos Escobar has won all of them, and I actually think that's good. I'm glad that Swerve didn't win. I was pulling for Swerve just because I want him to win whenever I see him, but I've said before that I don't think the cruiserweight title would do anything for Swerve. I think it would hold him back a bit, and I think that Swerve needs to be doing more on NXT, not less, and I think that the cruiserweight title would have him doing less. I think he needs to be in the North American title picture, and I think that he can do really great things on NXT. I think he's right on the cusp of being a breakout superstar. I think he has everything that you need. He's excellent in the ring, on the mic. There's that it factor. You can feel the charisma coming through the screen. He just needs a chance to show it on a bigger stage or with a bigger opportunity. And Santos Escobar continues to prove that he is an excellent heel or bad guy champion. I think that this was a classic. He keeps finding underhanded ways to get advantages on Swerve, and he eventually pulls out the win through nefarious means, and he's doing a great job with the cruiserweight title. Takes nothing away from him just because they don't use the cruiserweight title the way that they could. During this match, Joaquin Wilde and Raul Mendoza interfere on behalf of Santos Escobar, but Ashani Adonis, who was the enhancement talent that faced Velveteen Dream a couple weeks ago, comes out to help Swerve run them off. Seems like what we might be doing next is Ashani Adonis and Swerve Scott as a tag team, maybe going after the tag titles. That could be very interesting. I think that that's a good way to establish them in the early days as a team and get Swerve out of this feud and introduce Adonis into it and hopefully have them as a team, because I think they can do some really cool stuff as a team. And down the line, I'd like to see them maybe as NXT tag champions. Who knows? We'll have to see. But that definitely seems like the way that you would set up a new tag team. Io Shirai beat Candice LeRae to retain the NXT Women's Championship. I saw this coming. That's not to say, oh, I was right, or to brag. I'm wrong much more often than I am right. But again, I didn't see Candice LeRae being the one that would beat Io Shirai. I just never saw that as what was going to happen. I don't know what you do with Johnny and Candice going forward. They're just kind of a husband and wife duo, and I just never saw the story going in such a way that I thought either of them would win. But as always, Io Shirai puts on a fantastic match. Candice LeRae is no slouch. She's excellent in the ring. That often goes overlooked, I think, because she's often thought about in relation to Johnny, obviously. But I think that's unfair to her because she is a really, really, really great wrestler as well. And she also doesn't put on any bad matches. And we already know how I feel about Io Shirai on this podcast. She's one of the best champions in all of WWE. And she made herself and Candice look like $1 million. There were spots where you legitimately thought Io was going to lose the title. And Io has a great way of getting that across in every match that she has. Io eventually hits her Genius of the Sky moonsault, and she beats Candice. First, after we see Toni Storm on the video screen, basically announcing that she's going to be coming to NXT, and she is coming after Io Shirai. I want to say Toni Storm beat Io Shirai in the women's tournament, maybe? So they have a history together. And then we get a little video of the video game character. I'm still having trouble exactly putting into words what it was, but that night screen character riding their motorcycle to the outside of the performance center, and that character walks into the building, and somebody walks out with basically it looked like almost a leather jacket and a motorcycle helmet, and the character who we knew was going to be returning or debuting, however you want to put it, on this show, takes off the helmet, and it's Ember Moon. And so that was one of the two people that we thought it would be. We thought it would be Bo Dallas or Ember Moon. And as it turns out, it is Ember Moon. It's really good to see her back. It's been something like 14 months. Ember Moon got called up, if you can call it that, to the main roster, and she was injured in a segment for the 24/7 title. I think everybody was chasing probably R-Truth, and I believe it was a situation where they were all running backstage, and Ember Moon was running very fast, and so I believe she came to the back or came around a corner or something, and she was going faster than maybe she was supposed to be going because she wasn't expecting R-Truth to be right there, so she had to stop very quickly. And I forget if she tore her ACL or exactly what she did, but she got very badly injured. And we weren't sure if she was ever going to be able to wrestle again. She was on the bump. She had been interviewed before where she said her in-ring career might be over, and that seemed like something that could legitimately happen. And I can't stress enough how bad it would be for somebody's career to end on a 24/7 title, stupid little segment on Raw, the least important title in maybe the history of the company, and you get injured just chasing somebody for it. And so not only is Ember Moon back, she's on the best brand in WWE, where they will actually use her as opposed to just having her run around the back. I don't really understand why you would call up Ember Moon just to have her do that. It seems odd that NXT is immediately able to make her feel important, whereas her entire time on Raw, she did not. That's odd. But Ember Moon is back. She came out, so she's also gunning for Io Shirai. I do have some, reservations about Ember Moon, just because when I think of Ember Moon, I think of her rivalry with Asuka. And I say rivalry because they told me it was a rivalry, but I only ever remember Asuka beating Ember Moon and people getting a little bit sick of Ember Moon because they kept pushing that she was building to be the one that beat Asuka, but the problem was they had already had Asuka beat her, I know, once, maybe more than that, so it felt like it was a ship without a paddle kind of situation. So it kind of ran its course and the story ran out of steam, and so did Ember Moon in NXT the first time. But I don't think Ember Moon is the one that's going to take the NXT Women's title from Io either. I think that's going to be Rhea Ripley at some point. But this is great for Ember Moon. I'm so happy to see her back. I'm glad that her career can resume. We're going to see on this show that she looks like she is fully back. And I don't know how we're going to resolve the Ember Moon-Tony Storm situation, if it's going to be a triple threat, if we're going to have a number one contenders match, if Rhea Ripley's going to factor into that. But I'm excited to see where it goes, and I'm excited that Ember Moon, who is extremely talented, is actually going to get a chance to perform. What do you know? And finally, we had Finn Balor beating Kyle O'Reilly to retain Finn Balor's NXT Men's Championship. Now, Finn, in this match, they were hitting each other very hard, and it was an excellent match. It should have been the main event. It felt like a takeover main event. Finn broke, or rather fractured, his jaw in two places during that match. You could tell after the match, Finn's face didn't look right. He looked like he had done something to his jaw. Now, at the end of that match, Ridge Holland shows up. I'm very happy to see him back. You remember when people were qualifying for the North American title ladder match, that I was very impressed by Ridge Holland, I believe former rugby player, and they avoided all the traps that WWE used to fall into with football or rugby players, where they basically just have them do tackles. Ridge Holland's actually a very good wrestler, and he can actually perform very well, and he feels like a character that fits really well on NXT. And he can learn, because he is still very green. He was in the match with Johnny Gargano. He went for a power slam and didn't get the rotation he needed on it. Basically dropped Johnny on his neck. They did finish the match. And I remember at the time I was worried that that was going to hurt Ridge going forward. And my fears felt founded at the time, because Ridge hadn't been on TV. But I'm very glad to see him back on TakeOver, and he has Adam Cole over his shoulder, and the implication is that Ridge Holland attacked Adam Cole. That would seem odd, considering he's a member of the Undisputed Era, therefore he would have backup. Now, Undisputed Era is Kyle O'Reilly, Adam Cole, Bobby Fish, and Roderick Strong. Now, Adam Cole got attacked. Kyle O'Reilly's in a match. That means Bobby Fish and Roderick Strong would have been around somewhere. So it's kind of odd that they didn't help Adam Cole, isn't it? It's very odd that we didn't see them get attacked. There's no indication they were, and Adam Cole was. Kind of weird, huh? We're going to talk about that a little bit later as well. But we have NXT from the Capitol Wrestling Center. They do their TakeOver recap. And we cut Tommaso Ciampa is out. He didn't have a TakeOver match, but here he is. He doesn't feel like he has a strong purpose at the moment, just kind of feels like he is in NXT. He was in the running for the NXT title, but didn't win it, and now kind of feels like he doesn't really have a direction. But he's in for a match. They say that before the show, Kushida and Ciampa had to be separated, and now we have a match. Absolutely, yes. That's simple storytelling. I love it. These two dudes, for whatever reason, had an altercation earlier, and so William Regal made a match. That's what wrestling's for. Two dudes or two dudettes punching each other because they don't like each other. Awesome. Kushida's doing his full entrance again, but he's not doing the whole Back to the Future entrance. Makes sense if you're mad at a dude that you wouldn't finish your entrance, you would just want to fight him. He slaps Ciampa at the start of the match, and we are off. Kushida was already really good when he came to NXT, but he wasn't a super serious character. He was kind of a happy-to-be-there, kind of happy-go-lucky guy who happened to be excellent in the ring. And now he's on another level because now he's just very angry and very focused. It seems like he's really angry at whoever happens to be in the ring. Obviously, he was already mad at Ciampa, but regardless, whoever he's in the ring with, he seems mad at, and it, like he's trying to hurt them. And he did that with Velveteen Dream at TakeOver. And it really highlights that Kushida is excellent in the ring. He doesn't talk, really. He just gets down to business, and he wants to hurt people. And I can get behind that. Seeing virtual fans above the Performance Center people feels weird in NXT, and I don't love how it feels, because now it feels more like Raw and SmackDown. They may be doing it because there was a report that I believe it was one of the Performance Center members decided to throw a party with other members of the Performance Center, either because that person is a stupid person, or that person doesn't care about other people, or that person is both. I'm going to go with both. So they don't have as many people to use in the crowd because that person is a stupid person that doesn't care about other people. So maybe that's why they're doing it, because they definitely didn't have as many Performance Center athletes around the ring. So we'll have to see going forward after, presumably, those other people have to be quarantined. So we'll see kind of how that shakes out. But it's definitely an odd visual seeing Performance Center athletes around the ring like normal, and then virtual fans on the top. I'm still not sold on the virtual fan thing. It's as close as we're going to get for right this minute, but hopefully that experiment is not going to go on for too terribly long. It's just kind of a less intimate feel, and NXT has always been kind of an intimate feel with the crowd. They're having a really good match, but unfortunately, for a few reasons, Velveteen Dream, that cuts over, and he's on the top rope, and he's jumping off the top rope to hit Kushida, but Kushida moves, and he misses and hits Ciampa. So the bell rings, and then Kushida dumps Velveteen Dream outside and hits a dive to the outside. He throws Velveteen Dream over the barricade, and the Dream runs away. It's announced that Ciampa wins by disqualification because he was the one that got attacked. Ciampa is unhappy about winning that way, but Kushida seems fine with it, raises his hand in victory on the entrance ramp, while Ciampa seems to be saying, I don't want to win that way, get back in the ring and we'll settle this, and Kushida's not interested. So I guess we're continuing Velveteen Dream Kushida. I thought that, again, that Kushida's beatdown was a way to get Velveteen Dream off TV for a while, because maybe NXT realizes it's maybe not the best thing to have him on TV right now. There's, even when they post something about him on Twitter, there's one positive response for 20 negative ones. And we've already talked about how I personally feel about it, and I'm really covering it because it is Kushida and it's how we started the show. So we cut in. Ember Moon is in the ring. She says that she's surprised they let her talk on a mic. It's been a while. She says it's 14 months of being on the shelf, and she's back. Said, no one can tell me what to do, because I am Ember Moon. Somebody that said that they're surprised they let her talk on a mic. It's been a while. This is a very pedestrian promo that doesn't feel very inspired. Just kind of feels like a whatever promo. That's fine. She says that Mama wants some gold, baby. And then after she says that, she's interrupted by Io Shirai's music, because if you mention the NXT women's title, or her name, or the women's division in general, Io Shirai will appear. She is she is like Beetlejuice or Bloody Mary in that way, where if you mention her, she will appear. Io Shirai gets in the ring and grabs a mic, but before she can talk, Rhea Ripley's music hits, and she's on the entrance ramp. Rhea says that she loves Ember's new attitude, and she says, I guess you do deserve a title shot, but before she can finish that thought, Dakota Kai and Raquel Gonzalez run out from the back and attack Rhea Ripley. Ember Moon runs out to the entrance ramp to help, and the four of them are brawling while Io is still standing in the ring, just looking on at the chaos and the fighting. So William Regal comes out with referees that are trying to separate them, and he makes a match. It'll be Ember Moon and Rhea Ripley versus Dakota Kai and Raquel Gonzalez in the main event. I didn't particularly like this segment. I really wanted to. I like Io Shirai. I like Ember Moon. I like Rhea Ripley. I like Dakota Kai. I have no opinion on Raquel Gonzalez. This just kind of felt like a Raw segment where there's somebody challenging the champion, and then somebody else comes in, and then bad guys come in and attack, and the good guy helps, and then we just make a tag team match for the main event to settle it. I just kind of felt paint by numbers to get everybody involved. I understand what we're doing, and we're kind of building toward who's going to challenge Io Shirai, and we're settling some stuff between Rhea and Raquel, and so on and so forth. It just felt kind of paint by numbers and thrown together to me, and I don't expect that from NXT. After the break, we cut back, and one of the interviewers is asking Io Shirai why she just stood by and didn't help. And Io says, Ember Moon, not my problem. Rhea Ripley, not my problem. This, and she gestures toward the women's title, this is my problem. Io Shirai is great. She doesn't talk very much, but when she does, it's always gold, and it's always the best, because she's the best. We cut to Undisputed Era, all four members sitting together talking about how TakeOver was a terrible night, and Adam Cole's talking about Ridge Holland. Roderick Strong and Bobby Fish 100% helped this attack in some way. Adam Cole says he has no idea why Ridge Holland did what he did, but he said, Ridge, you broke my ribs, and I'm going to get you back, and that's undisputed. It's at this point I wrote, so Bobby Fish and Roderick Strong 100% paid Ridge Holland to do that to Adam Cole. I hadn't seen the little segment that comes up later, but we've already talked about how it's weird that Adam Cole and Kyle O'Reilly turned into faces or good guys while Roderick Strong and Bobby Fish seem to still be heels or bad guys. And that there's this weird, unspoken, not yet acted upon animosity between Fish and Strong and O'Reilly and Cole. And so I thought that it would boil over at some point. I certainly didn't see it happening this way, although it would make sense. I imagine it's a situation where Bobby Fish and Roderick Strong feel like the two of them are kind of leaving them behind and not focusing on the group, so on and so forth, so there's kind of a jealousy thing going on. Again, I hadn't seen the rest of the show yet, but at this point in my notes, it's 100% Roderick Strong and Bobby Fish paid Ridge Holland to attack Adam Cole to ensure that Kyle O'Reilly didn't win the title and Adam Cole got broken ribs. So we cut to the ring. Austin Theory's in the ring. Leon Ruff is already in the ring. Leon Ruff is an enhancement talent that we've seen a few times on the show. Recently saw on Twitter that Leon Ruff was recently signed to WWE officially, so congratulations to him. He hadn't been signed at the time. I imagine he was just brought in on whatever the per diem is for an enhancement talent to use on TV, but he's very good at selling, and his offense is very creative. And I think every clip I've seen of him is really cool stuff and innovative stuff, and I think they could do something with him down the line. NXT is really good at working with talent that you don't necessarily see fitting in right away. Like, Shotzi Blackheart was kind of like that. She was essentially going to be an enhancement talent, and then she had a different kind of look and a different style in the ring, and she was just really cool. And then when she was in the crowd, she stood out, and now she's a huge part of the show each week. So I feel like Leon Ruff could be somebody that he's very, very small, but that doesn't matter in NXT. He's never going to be on the main roster, I don't think, but I don't think he would want to. There wouldn't be anything for him to do. So I think down the road, Leon Ruff is going to have a cool story, and I don't see him being NXT champion or anything like that, obviously, but I think he can be a fun part of the show, and I think there's fun stories that you can tell with somebody like Leon Ruff, who's been used as an enhancement talent. So Leon Ruff is getting a lot of offense in early. At the start of the match, he hits a Hurricane Rana and goes to pin Austin Theory, and I absolutely thought that Leon Ruff was going to win because we're doing this story where Austin Theory can't win. But Austin Theory hits his finisher and finally gets a win. It's odd that they just ended that losing streak like that. I thought that there was going to be more of a story behind it. But he wins. He starts cutting a promo. He said, "That's exactly what happens when I'm given proper time to warm up." That is fantastic that the bad guy couldn't buy a win and then beats an enhancement talent that's half his size and says, "That's what happens when I have time to warm up." That was excellent. So last week, Adam Cole, you caught me ice cold. He said, "I am the future of NXT." He said, "I could prove that to you right now, but unfortunately you have those broken ribs." He says, "I'm the future of NXT a few times. And then he says, "And there's nothing anyone can do about it." And then some music hits and Dexter Lumis is back. Yes, you guys will remember, if you've been listening to the show, how much I love Dexter Lumis. It's been about 10 weeks since he was here, and Dexter's back! I believe he actually came back last week in a segment, but it wasn't on the Hulu cut, and I watched the Hulu cut, so if it's not on the Hulu cut, it must not have been particularly important to whatever network controls that. But it should have been, because Dexter Lumis is fantastic and he should be in every segment. It should be Dexter Lumis and Shotzi Blackheart and Io Shirai in every segment, and that's it. Dexter Lumis makes his full entrance. He is still creepy, and we have ourselves a match. We have a referee out there, and Austin Theory is like, "Fine, freak, let's do it." Dexter Lumis does this cool thing where after the bell rings, he always starts a match by just standing in his corner, staring at his opponent, and he just stands there with an open stance. Like, he's not blocking, he leaves himself open. And his opponent usually walks around the ring for a minute, and he just follows them, never breaking eye contact. I've never seen anyone do that before. I'm sure somebody has, but I've never seen it. And I love it, because it is very unsettling. It's a very unsettling thing to do because you're used to people just locking up or going right into the match, and it's very confident at the same time, and it really sets him apart immediately in every match that he's had in limited opportunities, I'll grant you, but in every match it immediately makes him feel different than any other wrestler in the ring, and that's just a really cool detail that I didn't pay a lot of attention to before. But I was very excited that Dexter Lumis is back, because he's back. And he looks really good. He has a few new moves he's busting out. The ankle seems to be, I believe it was his ankle, seems to be fully healed. He's moving around really well. He seems like he's moving around even better. Might just be that he had more of an opportunity to do stuff. But he looks really good. No sign of injury. Seems like he kind of he fully healed and then some, so I'm glad to see that. He seems to be showing some more personality, too. He doesn't just have, like, an absence of emotion like he used to. He's showing a little bit more emotion once the bell rings, which is interesting. I think that'll be good for him in the long run to show more personality in the ring and just kind of be a psycho, like, serial killer looking dude outside the ring. And then once the bell rings, he has more emotions. I like that, if that's where we're going. Loomis eventually hits that side slam into the silence, which is that chokehold. Austin Theory passes out. Dexter Loomis wins, and then he has Theory's head in his lap for a second. But immediately from off camera, Cameron Grimes comes in with the cave-in, which is just that stomp that he does. And he hits Loomis with it. That's a shot that WWE is very good at. They have way too many camera cuts, and it's ridiculous. But one thing they do very well is people doing a surprise move almost always happens off camera. So you don't see the person doing the move until you see the move happening, which is always very impactful because you don't see the I didn't see Cameron Grimes till the move was happening, and it feels very impactful to just be looking at Dexter Loomis and then all of a sudden a move's being done to him. I always love that shot, and it always gets me, even though I've certainly seen it a lot, but it's always really great. So looks like we're going to do Cameron Grimes and Dexter Loomis, which I am just fine with. I love Dexter Loomis so much. You guys know that. I really, really like Cameron Grimes. He's grown on me a lot, and he's one of my favorites each week now. It's really been a 180 on Cameron Grimes. He's really come into his character, and they've used him really well. We cut to the back, and Raquel Gonzalez and Dakota Kai are back there. Basically, Dakota Kai says that Ember Moon needs to get in line behind her when it comes to getting a title shot. Dakota Kai literally lost a title match a little bit ago, maybe a month ago. I don't understand why Dakota Kai is still in the title picture. She lost in a match where she had Raquel in her corner. So I don't understand why, if we're going to do presumably Ember Moon and Rhea Ripley and Toni Storm are going to be involved in some kind of I want to be the number one contender thing. But I do not understand why Dakota Kai would be included in that. Dakota Kai has not been particularly impressive when it comes to just in-ring stuff. And by that I mean in the story world of NXT. She's just kind of been in tag matches, and she was in that battle royal for a chance to be a number one contender and didn't win. She lost a one-on-one match for the title, so it's always weird when people keep getting chances at something. I don't know if we're headed towards a situation where Raquel Gonzalez starts to do a kind of what about me thing, because Dakota Kai is very focused on Dakota Kai. So I don't know. We'll see. We then get a recap of Finn Balor versus Kyle O'Reilly. It's interesting because rewatching these clips, in retrospect, there was 0% chance that Kyle O'Reilly was going to win the NXT title. This is Finn's first match first title defense. So Finn wasn't going to win and then lose the title. That's kind of wrestling almost 101, where the new champion, if they're going to go with that champion, isn't going to lose the title in their first defense. It's always another wrestler is built up to that level, and then it gives them some good competition, and then that person loses. So there was 0% chance that Kyle O'Reilly was going to leave as the NXT champion, but the way that they told the story of Kyle O'Reilly and this match and the fact that they did it on such short notice really got me into this match and into Kyle O'Reilly to such a point where when I was talking about TakeOver last week, I didn't know who was going to win when really I should have. And logically that made no sense, but I do love it when wrestling can do that. Can make me think that somebody's going to win even though logically they aren't. I've been a fan of wrestling and I've watched it religiously. Every time my wife comes home from work, she asks what I am watching, even though she always knows it's always going to be wrestling. I always watch it. Me and my dog watch it. My dog is a wrestling fan. He will watch it. It might just be because I'm there and I'm giving him pets. That might be more what it is. I tend to believe that my dog is my assistant for this NXT podcast. He's currently, as I look over, laying on the couch, sleeping on his favorite blanket. So he's on a break right this second, but generally he is. So Point being, I watch a lot of wrestling, and you notice the trends, especially in WWE. You start to learn how they like to tell stories, and sometimes they throw you a curveball for the sake of throwing a curveball and spicing things up, but for the most part, you know that Kyle O'Reilly's not going to be the champion, but that doesn't usually get me wrapped up to such a point where I think, well, I don't know, but it's always magical when they can do that. And it's magical that they were able to do that, especially considering that they told this story in just about a week. 1 week, Kyle O'Reilly becomes the number one contender, and then the next week, Shawn Michaels sets them both down for a face-off in the ring. That's between that and that on that same episode, the mini kind of chronicle episode about Kyle O'Reilly. Those were the only things that happened. So you had exactly 1 week to build this match. And you built it so well and presented Kyle O'Reilly as a singles wrestler so well to me that I was at a point where I didn't know who was going to win the main event. And that was really cool. I am fine with knowing who's going to win. When Matt and I were talking about Clash of Champions, the match that I was most looking forward to was Roman Reigns and Jey Uso. At Hell in a Cell, one of the matches I'm going to be looking forward to is still Roman Reigns and Jey Uso, and I know that Roman's going to win. So I don't need it to be unpredictable, I just need there to be a really good story. And it's incredible to me that NXT was able to tell me this story and make it an epic story that built a new singles wrestler in the universe of NXT and got me really hyped for a main event and made it unpredictable to me in literally 1 week and basically two segments, a recap package of Kyle O'Reilly and then a face-off between the two. That doesn't happen to me usually. And I love it when it does, when I can completely suspend my disbelief without meaning to, and I don't think twice about it. I was completely wrapped up in the story, and I love that. So, during that match, as I said, Finn fractured his jaw in two places. There's a trainer that basically says that he's going to be able to talk a little bit in a couple weeks, and then he's going to be out for a bit, but he should be okay, alluding to the fact that Finn is not going to have to relinquish the title. I know a lot of people, including myself, were worried about that. It would certainly suck if Karrion Kross wins the title, then has to relinquish it, and then Finn Balor wins the title and has to relinquish it. That would have been no good, but it looks like Finn may be out for a bit, but he's going to remain our NXT champion, which I think is very good. Finn has been on a tear since he came back to NXT after SummerSlam last year, and I didn't think he was going to be NXT champion again, but I'm very glad he is because he's really a different character than the first time he won it. He was a bad guy. Now he's kind of a shades of gray kind of good guy where he's just mad at bad guys. So that kind of makes him a good guy by default. And he's got a nastier edge to him. And I'm really excited to see what they do with him as NXT champion. Again, they built a really good story with a new singles wrestler. I understand he's not new in the context of wrestling, but in the context of NXT, he is in 1 week, and Finn was a big part of that. And at worst, you know that Finn Balor is going to give you an excellent match, and he's going to be an automatic great NXT takeover main event wrestler. And that's the best you can ask for in an NXT champion. And so again, very relieved that Finn Balor is going to be okay. This is the part of the show that confirmed what we said earlier. Ridge Holland is pulling up to the building in a nice car, and he's asked why he attacked Adam Cole. Ridge Holland looks over at the car. He says, "Last week I didn't have a Mercedes. This week I do. You can thank Adam Cole for that." Ridge was 100% paid by Bobby Fish and Roderick Strong to do that. That's not revealed on this show. I don't know how long it's going to take for them to tell us that, but that is absolutely what we're doing. I knew something was going to happen with Undisputed Era. I certainly didn't see this coming, but it's very interesting in a very cool way to do it that they paid Ridge Holland to do that. That's a different way to tell this story of a group breaking up. So I'm really excited to see what we do from here. Damian Priest is being interviewed talking about the fun after party celebrating his title defense. I don't care. So at TakeOver 31, I burned Johnny's name into this title. So I ask you, who's the next man up? And we don't know yet. So we'll have to see who's next up. It was an uneventful interview as things go. But our North American champion made an appearance and he still parties. So that's cool. He's a cool guy. Ridge Holland is out for a match. His opponent's going to be Danny Burch. This should be a very fun match. Two English dudes beating the crap out of each other. Ridge Holland gets the pin relatively quickly. I don't know if they cut some stuff out or for time or what happened. He picks up the win. It was kind of an abrupt finish to the match, and it was only a few minutes. Ridge Holland goes to put his cap back on. He kicks, kind of pushes Danny Burch with his foot while he's on the ground on his way out, and Burch starts attacking him again, so Ridge starts beating down Danny Burch again, and then Danny's tag team partner Oney Lorcan runs in, and Oney Lorcan is taken out by Ridge Holland. Referees come out and separate them, and this is the only thing that I really knew from the show, and it's unfortunate because Oney Lorcan jumps from out of the ring onto Ridge Holland. So I think one of two things were supposed to happen. Either Oney was supposed to fall onto Ridge Holland and take him out, or Ridge Holland, I think, was supposed to catch Oney Lorcan and maybe toss him aside or slam him down. I think Ridge Holland was supposed to catch Oney Lorcan, but I don't know. And basically, Ridge Holland starts to catch Oney Lorcan, and he basically goes down. And it looks all right for a second, except that Ridge immediately grabs his, it looks like, knee, and the refs separate Oney Lorcan from him immediately, and not in the showy way they usually do when it's a story, in a no, he's hurt kind of way. And you could tell this is real for a few reasons. One, because they stop showing Ridge Holland at this point. It's just showing Oney Lorcan. And two, the referees are standing with Oney Lorcan and clearly whisper something to him. And then Oney Lorcan gets back in the ring and starts checking on Danny Burch while looking over his shoulder at Oney Lorcan, which is what wrestlers do when they want to check on somebody, but they can't because the story that they're telling. So they play it out as normal until we go to commercial break and come back, where the announcers are doing their low voice when things are very serious and they don't necessarily know what to do. And they're showing the replay, and it looks like Ridge Holland, when he went to go catch Oney Lorcan, it looked like his left foot was basically kind of pointed outward, and he didn't have like a good base when he was catching him. And so as he went down, it seems like it put pressure on a weird part of his knee as he went down. And so it seems like he tore something, or we don't know exactly, but something not good happened. It seemed like Oney Lorcan's weight coming down on him as he was catching him, mixed with his foot being pointed outward, I'm going to guess, messed up his knee on the way down. You could tell it was bad right away because he was grabbing the knee and everything like that. And they show that Ridge Holland is being taken out on a stretcher. It looks like there's some sort of cast or something on his leg, like a soft cast to keep it probably immobilized. And Ridge Holland throws up a thumbs up to the crowd. That really sucks, man. I was really excited to see Ridge Holland back. There was that scare with Johnny Gargano, and I was scared that was going to negatively impact his career. I was really excited to see him back. He was going to be prominently featured with Undisputed Era and Adam Cole and some of the top people on NXT, and it looked like maybe he was going to do something next week with maybe Oney Lorcan and Danny Burch, and then this injury kind of out of nowhere comes in, and he's going to be out for a while. I mean, we don't know if it's going to be a couple weeks or if it's going to be longer than that. I will say that it didn't look good. Hopefully, I mean, he fell back quickly, so maybe it didn't put as much stress on his knee as it looked like, but if I'm just going by what it looked like, I'm not a doctor or anything close, but hopefully all you can really hope for at this point is that it's not as bad of an injury as it looked, because it looked bad. And knee injuries aren't the kind of thing you want to play with, so I imagine he's already gone and had an MRI or something to that effect. And, I mean, we'll find out more, but it really sucks that Ridge Holland was about to be involved in a couple cool, really cool stories, and unfortunately we're at a situation now where we just have to see how long he's going to be out. That sucks. We cut from that to a promo that Halloween Havoc is returning on October 28th, and it's going to be hosted by Shotzi Blackheart. It's so cool that Halloween Havoc's coming back. Triple H is awesome. Love him. And it's Shotzi Blackheart is the perfect host. She is built for hosting Halloween Havoc. I can't think of anybody that would have been better to host it. I didn't think we really needed a host for Halloween Havoc, but it being Shotzi Blackheart makes it awesome, and I love it. I believe they said it's going to be the 28th when that happens, and I am super excited about it. And now it's time for our main event. Rhea's out for the tag match, followed by Ember Moon. Dakota Kai and Raquel Gonzalez are already in the ring. Ember Moon has a new theme. I can't decide if it's as good or if it's worse than her old theme. Upon review, I can qualify pretty succinctly now that I think that it is worse, just because her original theme was so cool. I will say, this is not a Keith Lee situation where he went from really cool music to really stupid, generic, mid-2000s WWE music. Kind of music that clearly came from a bank of just quote-unquote hard rock, which is just, it sounds like a backing track for a hardcore elevator. Ember Moon's new theme is a good theme. It's just her old theme was so cool that this kind of pales in comparison. So, we'll see. So, we're going through the match. It's pretty good. Ember Moon is going for, it looks like a powerbomb on Dakota Kai, but it looks like Ember Moon either slips or lost Dakota Kai on the way up. She ends up hitting it, but she kind of it looked like she was slipping and then had to finish the move quickly to not dump Dakota Kai. So she kind of, Ember Moon kind of fell to her side and ended up executing the move, but it was scary for a second just because Ridge Holland's thing had just happened. And it kind of looked like she got Dakota Kai up, but then was off balance and had to kind of improvise. And it seems like it went okay, and then Ember Moon hits the Eclipse on Dakota Kai. It's really fun seeing that move back. It's basically she jumps off of the second or third rope and then does a front flip and then kind of does a Stone Cold Stunner from the top rope. It's very cool. It looks like it would mess you up. I do worry about Ember Moon's back doing that move as her finisher, but that's just me. It's a very cool looking move. I just hope that it doesn't do permanent damage to her, because again, Hulk Hogan messed up his back from doing just a standing leg drop, much less a stunner front flip from the top rope. But I'm going to trust her, and hopefully that move doesn't hurt her as much as it looks like it would. But she hits the Eclipse and picks up the win. Rhea and Ember get their hands raised, and then Rhea Ripley and Ember Moon are talking some smack back and forth, clearly about who's going to be number one contender. But then Ember Moon puts her hand out, and her and Rhea shake hands. Clearly there's some animosity, but for now they're cool. So it looks like we're going to have some version of Toni Storm, Rhea Ripley, Ember Moon, and maybe for some reason Dakota Kai battling it out to see who the next number one contender is. I don't know if you want to put Ember Moon in a title match that I think she's going to lose as of yet. I don't necessarily think that Ember should be the one to beat Io Shirai. I think that would kind of be out of nowhere. I'm just happy to see Ember Moon back. I think Rhea Ripley is eventually the person that's going to take that title if Rhea doesn't get called up to the main roster, which it seems like might happen. In that case, maybe it is Ember that takes it, or maybe it's Toni Storm. But I'm excited to see how that kind of shakes out, because we have a lot of people vying for that number one contendership right now. So we'll have to keep an eye on that. We'll have to keep an eye on... You can check my Twitter. I'll let you know as soon as I hear what's up with Rich Holland, how long he's going to be out. We'll have to see who Damian Priest's next opponent is for the North American title. And then depending on how long it takes Finn Balor to come back, who the next challenger for the NXT title is going to be. We have to find out. It has to be revealed to us that Bobby Fish and Roderick Strong paid him to attack Adam Cole in a week or two. So we got a lot of exciting stuff on this show, but we got a lot of exciting stuff in general. And hopefully, this is an exciting episode of the NXT podcast. Again, you can hit me up on Twitter. I am at ZachNXT. That's at ZachNXT. You can tell me what you like about the show, if you want to hear anything different. Also, we could talk about wrestling or really anything. Generally, the news and notes section at the top, I get directly from Twitter and my friends over there. So, at ZachNXT, come join the party. In the meantime, this has been a fun episode of NXT, an even more fun podcast. Thank you for joining me. I have been Zachary Smith. You have been fantastic as always. Thank you for listening.